Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh my goodness, I could just do this all day. I could. I can be in the studio doing this show all day. That's how much I love it. That's how committed I am to the cause, to talking with you all, hearing your phone calls, hearing your voices, seeing your posts on social media, your texts that you're sending into the station. Even if we disagree, we're talking, we're having a conversation so that we can change our community for the better. So I am so honored that Otto Bremer not only came and grabbed me off Saturday nights and put me on Saturday mornings and said, we need more of this. We need more of this discussion. We need more of this talk. We need more of this togetherness. We need more of this unity. But they said, we need another hour. It happened right after John Lewis died. Mother Josie Johnson, who is the mother of Minnesota's civil rights movement, was on the show and she ran out of time. But she has so many more stories to tell about her friend John Lewis and about her struggles and her battles to make Minnesota equal for not just African Americans, but for women as well. And the work that she's done. And oh my God, just to have to cut her off broke my heart. And so to have a sponsor who is committed to telling and hearing and supporting stories and voices, diverse voices, different voices, just means so much to me. So I'm so honored that the show went from 2 hours to 3 hours so that we can do more chatting and more talking and create more better and lasting change. And I am so excited to have my next guest on the show, Miss Jessica Bennett, New York Times editor at large, covering gender and culture. Girl, you were the first gender editor for the New York Times. Get it, girl. Get it, girl.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how do you get to be the gender editor? I mean, is that something that you had to fight for? Is that something they decided they needed and you just stepped into the role? Give me the backstory on that one.
It's a little of both. It was something that I had wanted to do for a long time and had been kind of repeatedly and at times unsuccessfully trying to convince the bosses of. And then things aligned in 2016. They decided that reaching a broader audience, reaching more women subscribers, and better covering gender issues was really important to the newspaper. And so I applied and it all kind of worked out.
Well, I am so glad that you are there because you are telling some amazing stories. I love your work. A lot of times, you step into the editor role, but you don't get to still do a lot of writing. How did you work that out?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I really haven't done a lot for the last couple of years, but this year I've tried to focus on getting back to it a bit. And so one of the things that has been really amazing is to be able to tell the stories of some of these uncovered and untold histories. And that's really been one of the focuses that we've thought about over the last couple of years is, you know, things like as we think about different movements and as we think about things like, you know, this year was the centennial of suffrage when women mm-hmm. got the right to vote. But there were so many stories missing from the way that we had learned that history and stories of women of color in particular. And so a lot of what I've been able to do is repopulate some of that history.
And, you know, it's all about perspective. It's all about those voices. You know, you only see what you see. And if nobody tells it to you, if nobody gives it to you, you know, you can't research everything. But to have these amazing stories by these iconic, especially African-American women who were mm-hmm. a part of not just Black history, but this country's history, is so inspiring for me.
Yeah, and I think that we're all relearning those stories. You know, we didn't learn about them in school. Like, women's history is just a fraction of what we learn in school.
Girl, two pages. Was it two pages? Girl, it was like two pages, and half of it was a picture. It wasn't really any text.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like these black and white photos of, like, white women in petticoats, and you can't really relate to them. But I do think, you know, in many places, we are starting to retell those stories with a much broader perspective and a much more nuanced perspective. And so it's been pretty incredible to learn some of the histories that we should have learned about in school.
Now, one of those histories blew me away because I'm sitting up here giving my daughter all the wrong information, right? So we're watching, you know, as Kamala Harris is being picked for, you know, Joe Biden's vice presidential candidate. And I'm telling her, this is the first Black woman who's going to be running for vice president. And that is wrong. That was the wrong information, Jessica. You had to put me up on Charlotta Bass, who did it back in 1952. How did you find out about this? Tell me her story.
Yeah, so, I mean, you are not the only one.
1952. How did you find out about this? Tell me her story.
Yeah, so, I mean, you are not the only one. That mistake. I think a lot of people, as soon as Kamala was nominated, were tweeting like, this is incredible, you know, this is a moment in history, and she was the first. And, you know, we talk a lot about first these days because we are rightly excited and encouraged by so many of the firsts that we are seeing in politics and other realms. But it was actually a historian of African American history, who has a new book out about the Black women's role in the suffrage movement, Martha Jones, who alerted
me.
I love
Martha
She's
Jones.
Amazing.
She is so great.
She alerted me to Charlotta Bass, and I was like, wait, what? So Charlotta Bass was actually the first? And so she schooled me. and I thought, you know, I don't think people know this story. We need to get this story out there.
Okay, so tell us this story, because I want everybody to know.
Yes. So Charlotta Bass is an activist. She was the actual first woman to run for vice president in 1952 on a Progressive Party ticket. You know, I don't think anyone really thought she was going to win back then. They got a real fraction of the vote in that year. But her whole campaign and her platform was about win or lose, we raise the issues. And she was a woman who, over the course of her life, had raised all sorts of issues that feel so, so relevant today. So she was born on the East Coast. She was born in South Carolina, and then she moved to Rhode Island. And then shortly after college, she went out west, like many Black Americans at the time, to Los Angeles. And she got a job at a local Black newspaper called the California Eagle selling subscriptions. So she was paid, I think, $5 a week to sell subscriptions to this newspaper. And 2 years later, her boss passed away and on his deathbed said, you need to take over. You need to take over this publication. You need to keep it alive. And so here she was, this young woman living in Los Angeles on her own, and she took over this newspaper that became the largest Black newspaper on the West Coast. And so she began her career as a journalist, and she ran this paper for decades, elevating issues like police brutality in the community, discrimination in hiring practices. All of these things that if you go back and read the archives of the California Eagle, I recommend, they're incredible, are like they are ripped from the headlines today.
I was going to say, what's different? What's different? Insert issue here.
Exactly. And, you know, at the time, the mainstream newspapers, the Los Angeles Times, the more mainstream newspapers were basically the white newspapers. And so they weren't covering these issues. And so the role of the black press was to elevate the issues that just weren't being talked about in the quote unquote mainstream press. And so she did this, and she did this from a journalist perspective, but also from an activist perspective, which I think is so interesting and something that a lot of my black journalist colleagues are grappling with today, because you can't really separate these two things. This is, you are living this experience that you are also reporting on. And so she started organizing as well. So she would, you know, write a story exposing police brutality, and then she would organize a big rally at the local police station. And she became known to all of the local business leaders in Los Angeles, and there was a really robust community in her area then, and she started becoming political. She lobbied to serve on a grand jury as the first black woman to do so. She then decided to run, and these were mostly unsuccessful bids, but for city council, later for Senate, and then ultimately for vice president.
Where did she get the courage to do this? Because that could have cost her life. I mean, literally, it was one thing back then when she was doing that to work for the black press and tell the black story, but to challenge the establishment and really want the power that others had at the time, that's a threat to the establishment. And they didn't take kindly with those kind of people. We saw our leaders back then, you know, like Dr. King and Malcolm X and so many others, Medgar Evers, who were killed because of the things that she successfully did.
I mean, where did she get it? I'm not sure, but she certainly had this sense of fearlessness. And she, when she took over the paper, she hired an experienced editor who would become her husband. And he used to always say to her, you know, Mrs. Bass, you're going to get me killed one day. And she would say, Mr. Bass, if I do, it's going to be in a good cause. And so it was. It wasn't that she was doing all of this without pushback. She had run-ins with the KKK. They showed up at her office one night. She writes in her memoir called 40 Years, she writes that she kept a gun in the drawer of the desk, but she'd never handled a gun before. And so when these hooded men show up outside her office demanding that she let them in after she had exposed a plot by them, she pulls out this gun. She doesn't even know how to handle it. She's maybe pointing him in the wrong direction, but she stood firm and they left. And so she faced this type of violence, perceived violence, all throughout her life. And, you know, later on in the McCarthy era, she was surveilled by the FBI. She was on all sorts of lists who claimed she was a communist. And she was constantly having to defend herself. Her FBI file, which some of the members of her family requested over the years, it's like 2 reams thick. It's like 600 pages or more.
Wow.
And they were observing her until her death.
Oh, my God. We're talking to Jessica Bennett, the first gender editor at The New York Times. She has just made all of our jaws drop when we found out Kamala Harris was not the first African-American woman to run for vice president. It was actually Charlotta Bass back in 1952.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.